raising more awareness about Ontario's new sex ed curriculum.
By informing our fellow church members, we are raising a grassroots awareness of this curriculum and the effects that it could have. And we believe that by equipping our fellow Christians to have these conversations with people in the world that they meet every day, we're going to raise awareness of this.
On the feature interview today, Aaron Osterhoff from the ARPA Niagara chapter on what they're doing to alert the community about the new policy. On the news, Bill 77 has passed in the Ontario legislature, and the way it went through is raising some eyebrows. Also, with respect to the Ontario sex ed curriculum, a CHP candidate in Hamilton is making an interesting prediction about what might happen in September. And ARPA's voice was clearly articulated on the CBC in British Columbia earlier this month.
And now, Lighthouse News. Lighthouse News is a presentation of ARPA, the Association for Reform Political Action. Here's your host, Al Sebring.
Bill 77 is now law in Ontario. You'll recall we talked about this on the program a few weeks ago. This bill cuts all government funding for therapy that seeks to change or redirect sexual orientation or gender identity. It also places an outright ban on any counseling of anyone under 18, which might lead to them rethinking those issues. Essentially, it would place severe restrictions on pastors or Christian counselors in the performance of their regular work. ARPA had asked to appear before Ontario's Health Committee sometime this summer on the expectation that the bill would be up for debate in the fall. But policy analyst Colin Postma says the whole thing was rushed through with just a few days left in the spring legislative sitting, with absolutely no opportunity for input from anyone who might have had some negative things to say about the bill.
Suddenly on May 28th, there was a motion to proceed, and basically 3 business days later, the committee heard the verbal submissions, and they didn't let us know, even though they had assured us that we were on the list. On that one day of hearings, the people who spoke, the list was the following: Trans Lobby Group, Queer Ontario, Transgender Inner Selves, EGAL, which is another queer or homosexual group, and then the Canadian Professional Association for Transgender Health. And then basically the only 2 speakers who came as individuals were a person named Jake Pine and an Erica Muse. And those 2 were individuals who consider themselves to be transgender, and they were both sitting at the table with Cherry DeNovo when she originally proposed the bill.
So now it's become somewhat of a rear guard battle, trying to get the legislature to undo the passage of that bill.
We are asking them to promote a society where freedom is upheld and individuals seeking or needing help are given this help by the appropriate institutions in a manner that's truly consistent with their well-being. And then what we'd like to do as well is kind of urge our grassroots supporters as well. Go to the ARPA website, and you can find links in there with various easy mail letters that I've put together. And you can contact your MPPs in Ontario or your MLAs in other provinces. So there's letters for each of the different provinces. Is there voicing concerns about that bill and the possibility of such bills being passed in the future in your province?
Manitoba also rushed through an almost identical bill in the past few weeks, and there are worries that other provinces may be considering similar legislation in the future. We've got a link to those easy mail letters that Colin was talking about on the Lighthouse News homepage. The Wynne government in Ontario is still set to push ahead with its controversial new sex education curriculum in September. A curriculum that's been criticized as being far too explicit and completely age-inappropriate in some of the things it mandates. The Christian Heritage Party candidate in Hamilton Mountain, James Enos, says the government may not realize the kind of backlash that will likely be coming on this, especially from one segment of Ontario society.
From the Muslim perspective, they're very aggressive on this. I believe that they will be in the classrooms. They will be very vocal about it. They won't let teachers proceed. I believe that they will make all kinds of efforts to stop it from happening in the classroom. I would advocate, not threatening, but I would advocate being very vocal with the teacher directly, letting them know it's not acceptable regardless what the province says. I would not hesitate for a moment.
Enos also says that Christian schools are, quote, a temporary place to hide. He predicts that over time, the government will come after those schools and homeschoolers with similar requirements for teaching this material. And finally, it's always heartening when ARPA can get its message out beyond just the usual support base. Executive Director Mark Pennigan had a chance to do that earlier this month on a province-wide call-in show on CBC Radio in BC. The topic was the renewed call for Parliament to rewrite the criminal code to ban corporal punishment, spanking. Mark was on the program with Don Black, a former NDP MLA and MP from suburban Vancouver, who cited what she said was the success of a spanking ban in Sweden. Penninga countered with some interesting statistics.
They've gone well ahead of Canada. It's back in 1979 when they outlawed all physical discipline. And if we look at what's happened in that country on so many different levels, it's been a failure. First of all, if you actually examine the children, so the children who grew up in Sweden under this law where physical discipline isn't allowed, we've seen physical child abuse by relatives against children under the age of 7 has increased 489% in between 1981, so that's just after the law was passed, to 1994. We've also seen a 519% increase in criminal assaults by children under age 15, so after this law was passed, against children age 7 to 14. And then just want to pull out the results of what's happened to these families where children are being removed from the homes. 22,000 Swedish children were removed from their homes right after this was criminalized in 1981. And compare that to the other countries in Europe, only 163 children were removed in Norway, 552 in Finland, 22,000 children. And I think we should all agree, I would hope anyways, that legislators have to ask themselves whether a child's better off with their loving parents, who might occasionally administer physical discipline, or forcefully removing them from their parents and making this chasm of distrust and fear created by the state. That's what comes from this smackdown by the state against all spanking laws.
Back with more after this.
Please take time this summer to meet with your MP to discuss the matter of euthanasia. As MPs will be in their ridings, summer is a great time to do this. As we head into an election this fall, this is an issue that cannot be ignored. The deadline for new legislation is February 6, 2016, just 3.5 months after the election. Be sure to read our policy report, available at arpacanada.ca/publications, to understand this issue and engage with your MP.
And we're back on the program. With me on the feature interview today is Aaron Osterhoff. Aaron's with the ARPA chapter in Niagara, that's the St. Catharines in such area in Ontario. And Aaron, you guys have been doing a lot with respect to this whole controversial sex education curriculum that Premier Wynne's been introducing in Ontario that's set to start up in September. Talk to me a little bit, first of all, about the kind of things you've been doing to raise awareness out there.
Yes, hi Al. Well, thank you very much for having us on here. We've been very active in our local community, by mostly our church community, by presenting to our local congregations a PowerPoint presentation outlining the effects that we believe Kathleen Wynne's new sex ed curriculum will have on our area and our province as a whole.
And what are those effects? I talked to Ben Harsevoort from Heritage Christian School some time ago on the program, and he wasn't too concerned from the perspective of the Christian schools, because he says, you know, some of the stuff isn't, like the elementary levels aren't regulated, and at the high school level it's part of the health curriculum and it's context. It's like having to teach evolution. He says we can work with this.
Ben Harsevoort is correct in what he says, that it does not affect our schools directly at this time. ARPA Niagara has decided, and in speaking with many other people on this curriculum, that it does, in fact, affect our schools in a roundabout way. Over the long term, we will be surrounded by a society that believes that the things taught in this curriculum are normal. And as we have seen in other provinces across Canada, in Manitoba and Alberta in particular, this can begin to affect our schools. Usually the first step is it being forced upon public education, and then the second step would be mandating it in private schools.
So what's the goal here? I mean, are we going to convince Premier Wynne to back down on this by September? Or I note that you're talking about presenting to church groups rather than applying political pressure or going terribly public. Or are you doing billboards and things like that too?
Well, this directly follows ARPA's mandate to inform, equip, and encourage our local church members with regards to political events and activities that are happening. So ARPA Niagara does not want to do all the work of lobbying on its own. In fact, that's not our job. Our job is to equip Christians to do this work. So by informing our fellow church members here in the Niagara Peninsula, we are raising a grassroots awareness of this curriculum and the effects that it could have. And we believe that by equipping our fellow Christians to have these conversations with people in the world that they meet every day, we're going to raise awareness of this.
Are you getting any response from sort of the non-church community? I don't know how far you've gone outside of the church community, but I mean, what's the general feeling out there? The people I talk to in Ontario, you know, there's two camps, one that doesn't think it's a big deal, and the other camp that is opposed to this, and not necessarily from any kind of principled or Christian perspective. They're just rednecks, and they say, you know what, leave that stuff out of the schools. I'll handle it at home.
Yes, absolutely. We're getting both responses, both positive and negative, from people around us, and this is to be expected. It's obviously a divisive issue. At the same time, at our annual spring banquet, we had Dr. Scott Messon speaking there. And he was very clear that he is being approached regularly by many first-generation immigrants who are against this curriculum but have not been able to articulate it properly.
Yeah, we actually had the clip of him saying that at the speech on the Lighthouse News program last week.
We believe that if we are able to articulate it from our Christian point of view, provide a Christian perspective to this argument against the curriculum, that we can bring both the first generation immigrants on board as well as many other people in our local communities that are opposed to this.
So ultimately the goal is to get the province to change its mind by September? Or is there a longer view at play here?
There is definitely a longer game plan here. Obviously, in a perfect world, we would have this curriculum removed by September. But I think we're trying to raise awareness of to those around us is that these are our kids. What is being taught in these schools is so extremely important. You cannot believe that what is being taught by the Wynn government in our schools is an unbiased point of view. What we're seeing is that these children are being indoctrinated with regards to sexual identity, gender confusion, and that this is something that we need to raise awareness of all the way along. It has long-lasting impact, a lot more than just this curriculum. But I believe that this curriculum is a great starting point to open up a conversation with our neighbors about, obviously, the gender identity issue, but also as to the obvious bias that this government has against Christian education.
Aaron, thank you very much, and we'll definitely keep our listeners posted on this. It's an ongoing file, and as you say, I don't think it's going to be resolved by September.
Absolutely not. I'm sure it won't be. But I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today.
Normally, that would wrap up the program, but this week, one added little bonus, and it really ties in to what Aaron was saying. It's something I stumbled across online at the Gospel Coalition website. It's a video of an interview with Albert Moeller, the president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. He's speaking to interviewer Mark Mellinger, and they're talking about the culture, specifically about the sexual revolution, the kinds of things I was talking with Aaron about. We link to the full interview on the Lighthouse News webpage this week. Just a brief excerpt from the interview, a couple of questions and a couple of answers that further put into context some of the things Aaron was saying.
What does faithful Christian witness look like in this culture that already has rapidly changed? And as you've alluded to, it's probably going to keep changing, go further this direction the next 5, 10, 20 years?
Well, absolutely. And I think the first thing we have to recognize is that Christ established a church. He didn't establish Christianity. He established a church. And the church is, by biblical definition, the great counterculture. It should always be the great counterculture. And one of the things we're now looking back at is the fact that we were living in an artificial age, an age of nominal and cultural Christianity, an age when the culture at least thought it agreed with us and needed us and wanted us and validated us. And we got pretty accustomed to that. But the Christian church, when it has been depicted in the New Testament, and when we see it on its growing edge where it's found in the world, is not found where it's in cultural comfort, but in cultural discomfort. And the church, as that great sign of contradiction, is going to be the great challenge for us, how to be a truly Christian counterculture.
So help me with this then. You know, there are still a lot of Christians who would like to really keep the pieces of the old moral understanding that are still there in place, or would like to fight to win the old moral understanding back in some ways. And most of this, I guess, would be in the realm of politics.
Sure.
What would your counsel be to those Christians? Is that fruitful in this day and age?
Well, whether or not it's fruitful, done in the right way, it's faithful. I mean, if we really do love God and love neighbor, then we hope for, pray for, and we must strive for a social order that will lead to human flourishing and to human happiness. We don't believe that's going to happen by joining and validating this revolution. We also don't operate on the false hope that somehow we're just an election away from national revival or from somehow just one clincher argument from the culture agreeing with us. So it's a long, persistent faithfulness. There are public policy issues that we've got to speak to, and we need to speak to them, but we've got to speak to them without the triumphalism that has so often, frankly, marked Christians in the public square, and without the hurt feelings and the sense of cultural loss that builds a lot of resentment among Christians. We don't have any right to be resentful. We weren't promised the culture.
This has been Lighthouse News, delivering news and commentaries on today's current events to equip Christians for their task in the public square. Production Manager Brian Grimm, Technical Director Nate Boscher. Questions or feedback? You can leave us an audio comment by clicking on the answering machine button at the top of the Lighthouse News homepage, or you can send us an email, info@arpacanada.ca. Be sure to join us again next week for another edition of Lighthouse News.